Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host.
Today, I'm speaking with Neto Rosatelli, and Neto is a famous cataract surgeon for his YouTube channel, but also a cataract surgeon and ophthalmologist from Sao Paulo in Brazil. Neto, thank you so much for joining me today for our conversation. And just before we begin talking about lots of other things, I was wondering if you could just tell the listeners a bit about yourself and your background.
Okay, I'm a Brazilian ophthalmologist and I'm 57 years old. I finished med school in 1987 and did ophthalmology residence training in 1988 and 1989. So I've been performing cataract surgery for 32 years now. And when I started private practice, extracapsular cataract surgery was the norm. But I soon started doing phaco in 1994. At that time, very few surgeons did phaco cataract surgery. Phaco was a big paradigm shift in cataract surgery, with a steep learning curve and nowhere to learn, and most surgeons didn't make the cut at the time. I was soon doing surgery for many colleagues in the region. That's how I started doing high-volume cataract surgery. They concentrated their cases for me to operate in one day, and it became routine for me to do more than 30 cases per day at the time. Although my residency training was in all fields of ophthalmology, as subspecialty training was not common at the time, I concentrated my practice in cataract surgery. In the year 2000, the Brazilian public health system began to allow third parties to be contracted to perform surgeries in some medical fields where backlog was significant and cataract surgery was by far the most needed one. That's when I began performing surgeries in the public health system in a high-volume philosophy, let me put it that way. And around 2 years ago, I closed my private practice to do only that, cataract surgery. It's a surgeon's dream.
Neto, you've subspecialized really in cataract surgery and high-volume cataract surgery, but what made you want to choose cataract surgery over any of the other subspecialties in ophthalmology?
Well, I think probably the outstanding result we get with cataract surgery. I think is an unparalleled result. Maybe we could argue that refractive surgery gives some similar results, but cataract surgery, many times or most of the times, you operate on a patient which is not seeing well, or is having a very bad time with vision. So the difference the patient gets in vision is outstanding. The appreciation the patient has, it's on a very different level than when comparing with refractive surgery, for example. So, and at the time I was doing my training, refractive surgery was done only by the radiokeratotomy technique, and it was in a, let's say, diminishing. It was getting in a very being done in a very very much. As time passed, we began to see the problems that radiokeratotomy did, and so we were in some low state, good state in refractive surgery. So I think cataract surgery was really my choice because I was very excited to be able to do this kind of thing for the patient.
Sure. So you mentioned there a high volume cataract surgery, and you mentioned when you first started doing high volume surgery that consisted of maybe doing 35 cases a day. So for comparison, in the UK we might do usually at most 10 cases in a morning and then 10 cases in an afternoon and probably 20 in a day, and that's probably at the higher end of how many cases are done in a day. So 35 is quite a lot. But in modern times, pre-COVID, what would you say would be the normal number of cataract surgeries you'd do in one day?
Yes, in normal days, the normal number will be around to 120 to 150 surgeries. Around that would be a very good estimate.
So, that's a huge number, and many of the listeners might not even believe you. How do you have the physical reserves yourself to actually do that number of surgeries?
Well, I think great attention to ergonomics is necessary. For example, I use a gamer's chair to operate, which allows excellent back and leg support. Perfect patient head positioning by the team is essential to improve patient comfort and cooperation. When I operate with a heads-up system like the Ingenuity, it's the best situation, but good ergonomics can be achieved with the optical microscope also. One important aspect is to foresee potentially difficult and or time-consuming cases and schedule them distributed along the day and put them in the surgical table at appropriate times. I make breaks along the day, usually 2 in the morning, lunch, and 2 in the afternoon. Of course, not only me, but my team needs rest too. But let me point out, physical stress is not the most difficult. Mental pressure and strain can be huge, especially when you take in account the time constraints and number of patients and let that enter in your mind. The key is one patient at a time, concentrate only in the very surgical step you're doing, and time flows and your mind gets light and you don't even perceive the day passing. Mood in the OR is very light and happy. We have music. It's a very pleasant experience. And on top of that, the outstanding feeling of accomplishment at the end of the day, so many happy patients, a really rewarding thing. It's far from a burden. It's a prize.
Sure. So, with that many number of cases, things must have to be quite efficient in your operating theatre. Are there any pearls or experience or advice that you might be able to provide to just summarise your setup in the operating theatre in terms of how many people you have and how patients transition and flow through the system?
Yes, I would say that high-volume cataract surgery represents a paradigm shift in cataract surgery. It's not only a very high number of surgeries performed per day by the same surgeon, let's say 50 or more. It's a whole method of surgical flow organization, which involves a great number of highly trained personnel, surgical consumable material logistics, optimized patient scheduling, screening, examination, routine and facility flow, and a lot of other different managing aspects, all directed to allow performing a great number of surgeries while maintaining all the required safety and quality standards. Really, the key to achieve that is teamwork. The system works as a very efficient and calibrated machine, let's say that way, while not losing the important aspect of humanized patient care, and is able to provide an outstanding surgical outcome to a great number of patients consistently. The economy of scale allows use of a high quality consumables, state-of-the-art equipment, a highly experienced surgeon, and so on. High-volume cataract surgery is an essential tool in dealing with cataract blindness, making very efficient use of the usual restricted resources for that. It's not easy, though. It requires a great effort, attention to protocols, standardization of procedures, constant evaluation of results, as I mentioned before, perfect teamwork. That's the most important thing in high-volume cataract surgery.
You mentioned quality there. Do you think that with doing so many cases in a day that there's any compromise in quality? For example, do you see any increase in your rate of posterior capsular rupture or endophthalmitis, for example?
And no, rather the contrary. It's I think it's a very interesting thing, but it can be explained. Procedures are standardization, use of quality material and equipment, highly experienced team and surgeon, all that leads to an outstanding quality surgery and surgical outcome. Of course, if attention to that, all that is not present, things can and will go bad. High volume cataract surgery is not for inexperienced surgeons and poor managers. It requires great will and effort and a strong mindset. I think that explains why our complication rate is much less. It's because with the intense training and attention to details and constant effort to do things the best way possible, we achieve that. I'm very glad to say that our endophthalmitis rate is very low. My last case was in December 2017. To round number, or 3 years ago, to round numbers, in 2018, I did 23,000 surgeries. In 2019, 26,000. And in 2020, almost 10,000. That gives me now almost 60,000 surgeries in the last 3 years, counting from the last case, a rate of 0.0016. Maybe it's a spree of good luck, but as a doctor, I don't believe or count with luck. In the previous years, I used it to have around one each 15 to 20,000 surgeries, or a rate of 0.005%. This is much lower than most statistics show. But that's to be expected. Experienced surgeon, very low complication rate, very controlled surgical environment, etc. All that leads to a very low complication rate and endophthalmitis rate, thankfully.
And do you use intracameral antibiotics for your surgery?
Yes, yes, sure. I think this is one of the most important achievements or procedures we have in recent phaco and cataract surgery, because I'm sure this greatly influenced the lowering of infection rate.
Yeah, I'm just curious. You know, with this high volume surgical approach, do you ever offer patients the options for multifocal lenses or toric lenses?
No, as I operate on the Brazilian public health system, we have no provision for that. And it is, in a way, there are very strict rules in trying to, for example, protect the patients from eventually being charged for, let's say, if he or she should change his lens options. We can't do that. We always use the same, or let's say, monofocal IOLs in all patients. We have no provision for toric IOLs, although we make incision modifications to diminish astigmatism, but multifocal IOLs we can't. So if the patient wants to have a multifocal IOL implanted, he or she should see an outside ophthalmologist or clinic to be operated. We can't do that.
But you yourself don't offer that, do you? You only work directly for the Brazilian public health system?
Nowadays, yes. I started my private practice in 1992, and around 2 years ago, I closed my office to do only cataract surgery in the public health system.
What was your motivation for doing that?
Well, I think after 25 years of private practice, let's say, we have a lot of things that we must do in our practice, in our office, that we do not like. And one of them was this trend in ophthalmology that we have to, it's very difficult to deal with patient expectations with, for example, multifocals, IOLs, and many patients came to the office with a wrong idea of the situation, with very high expectations of what we could offer, and so many other reasons. But I think the main reason I really wanted to close my office and only do surgeries in the public health system was because that's what I really love to do. I love doing surgery. So I, during all this time, I was able to set up a system for me that works in a very good way, and it's a very, it's like I said, a surgeon's dream. I only do surgeries. I'm able to control all the variables inside the operating room. I choose the IOL, I choose the material, I choose everything that I use, so I can work the way I want, and with a very good team. And all this makes my day a very pleasant one, despite the high number of surgeries I do. So it's a very good way of life for me, and I love it.
And of course, you also choose the music in the operating room.
Yes, I think music is a very important part of our surgical environment, let me say this way. I think it relaxes the patient, it sets the mood of the room, and it's amazing the difference this makes in my work. And I love music, and the patients really appreciate that we put a very calm music, and he has something to distract, to hear while we're operating. And the patients are very appreciate that very much, and sometimes vocalize that.
And what kind of music do you listen to in your operating theater?
Mostly, we choose calm music, instrumental music, because it has a twofold purpose. One is to relax the patient, and the other, of course, is not to interfere with our conversation and my feedback from the phaco machine, for example. So I can't have a louder music or something too, let's say, too extreme. And so we have many very good playlists. And of course, during all this time, the musics were changing because music tastes change. But I couldn't point out one specific genre we use. But I use a lot of piano music, some harp music and flute music also. And I think if I would point, I would say a genre that it's the most used is New Age music, for example.
Okay. So Neto, ophthalmologists outside of Brazil know you best for your YouTube channel, and clearly you're a passionate educator. What motivated you to start your YouTube channel, and what motivates you to educate other ophthalmologists around the world?
And I think surgery videos are an outstanding learning tool. As I started following cataract surgery channels on YouTube, I was amazed at how much I was learning from them and being able to appreciate how many different ways and techniques different surgeons used for the same situation. It then sparked on me the will to share my own experience and techniques. And it ended up becoming an important part of my practice, let's say. I love doing the YouTube videos.
And you know, one of the things I enjoy most about your YouTube videos is actually the music. And you know, how do you actually edit all the music and the video just to make it so smooth and so enjoyable for people to watch and listen?
It's a very good and interesting question. And I was a DJ in my teens, in the disco era, late 70s. So I'm very comfortable with music work, editing, mixing, and etc. I wanted to make the videos in my main channel as a music video clip, or what I call the fake clip. A complete surgery with accompanying music. It's amazing how the music adds to the viewing experience, and I think electronic music goes very well with the cataract surgery. The two most important features that I look for when choosing a music for a surgery are: one, the music duration. It needs to be near the same as the surgery duration, and I tweak a little the video edition or even the music track to get a perfect time match. This is very important. The other is the music's mood. It should emphasize the surgery, make a good complement. And I try to make the different music parts or variations to coincide with the surgical step change. And that really makes the video more pleasant to watch. It may be surprising for the audience to know that music choosing and editing are the most difficult and time-consuming tasks in my videos. Although my channel is not monetized, I mostly use royalty-free music to avoid copyright problems.
That's really interesting. You record so much of your surgery, even as an extremely experienced surgeon, but how important do you think it is for trainee surgeons to record and indeed have the ability to record all of their surgery?
Well, I think it's a most important thing. I think the trainee has the opportunity to watch his or her surgery later calmly and really appreciate all the details. You really can't do that when watching the surgeries, when doing the surgery, I mean. So I think it's a wonderful opportunity for the surgeon to evaluate him or herself. It's very important. And I think it's, I should say that when the trainee watches his or her own surgery and pays attention to everything he or she did and see all the errors or the right things were done, he's able to more efficiently change the approach to the surgery and learn to do in the best or in the right way faster. So I think this is essential. And I think it allows for a much, much faster progression on the technique. And I strongly recommend the trainee surgeons to do. Also, recording surgeries almost always end up having a very positive effect on the surgeon's technique, in a kind of Hawthorne effect. The surgeon increases the quality of the surgery that is being recorded and ends up incorporating improvements on his or her technique elicited by that. All surgeons should do it, in fact.
That's really, really interesting that you've mentioned the Hawthorne effect and that principle and concept that because we know we're being watched, we modify our behavior in some way.
Yes, I should say that I was amazed how much I improved my surgery after I started my YouTube channel, because of course I usually do not record all my surgeries. It would be impossible to manage all the files, but most of the times I choose some surgery to be recorded because the patient is very cooperative and the case is interesting. And for many reasons, I foresee that this will make a very good video surgery. And it's very important to pay attention to eye centration and focusing and everything else that goes in the surgery, and make all the surgical steps in a very, very controlled, and in a way that someone who's watching can understand and can follow. And so, without perceiving, you begin to change your operating style to a much better way than you did. And you end up operating, let's say, much better than you previously did. And you start to do all these things in all of your surgeries. It's as if you were recording every surgery you're doing for everyone to see. And the will to do a better surgery, a beautiful surgery, you end up doing a high quality surgery. So I think it's a very interesting thing, and I would recommend every surgeon to start his or her YouTube channel to have this experience. You would see a great improvement in your technique by doing that.
That's really, really interesting. And you know, you record some really beautiful videos, not just in terms of your surgery, but the quality of your video is, you know, outstanding. And I especially appreciate that you upload videos in 3D. And I do actually enjoy watching those on my Oculus Quest 2 headset in 3D, and it's mind-blowing. But you know, for those trainees who don't have an Ingenuity microscope to hand, what advice would you give to those surgeons in terms of how to get the best quality video recording possible?
And well, of course, you depend on having a good recording equipment. But the answer to this question would be extremely complex, detailed, and long. I'll avoid getting into technical details, which would be out of the scope of this podcast. And most of my channel's surgery videos are now recorded with an Alcon Luxor microscope and with the Ingenuity system. And the Ingenuity system is a ready recording package, recording 3D with an outstanding quality, and this greatly facilitates things. I also use a Leica M620 microscope, which is a medium range microscope, let's say, with its own video adapter and a high-end Sony camera. I record with the maximum resolution and frame rate possible always. This ensures that you have a video, a raw video that you can tweak in a better way to achieve a better result. But equipment is only part of the deal. Some post-processing is essential to correct color and luminance and final video editing. And I use Final Cut Pro for that. And I think many surgeons would be, I don't know, afraid to get into this technical world of video editing, but this is important to achieve to make a very good surgical video, and it's not as difficult as it seems. And as I already mentioned, some additional aspects are important to make a good and pleasant surgical video, and these are completely dependent on the surgeon's attention. First, eye centration all the time. Second, perfect focusing. Third, good eye magnification, the larger the better. And fourth, eliminate idle time from the video. I think there are many aspects that are necessary to pay attention to make a good video. And many surgeons think that the camera, the video camera that you'll be using, is the most important, but it isn't. Usually, the most difficult part of setting up a video system is finding and adjusting the microscope video adapter. Some microscopes come with one, but many don't, and you have to buy a third-party adapter, and you have to understand all these technical things, and I think this would be the most difficult thing for the beginner to deal with, to set up the video system, including the video adapter and the camera.
No, I really appreciate those tips and those pieces of advice. And I'm actually reliably informed that you're going to be attending our virtual college congress this year to teach our trainee surgeons. And you know, maybe you could share some more tips with us when you come and show us some of your videos too.
Yes, I'm really looking forward for that. And I think it will be an amazing meeting. And I hopefully I will be able to share some experience and surely I will learn much from them. So I'm looking forward for this wonderful meeting.
So Neto, the one final topic I wanted to discuss with you was about the head-up microscope that you use. And you know, this is a topic that many people discuss, and people seem to have very strong opinions about, you know, whether or not head-up microscopes give as good quality, have any lag, or any disadvantages compared to a traditional operating microscope with oculars. And you know, given that you use this so frequently with such a high volume of cases, I was wondering, you know, what's your experience with using the Ingenuity microscope, and you know, potentially what disadvantages have you noticed with the system compared to the traditional microscope?
Well, I think there are many, many advantages with the heads-up system. Ergonomics is fantastic. You are able to operate in a much more comfortable and relaxed position. You have outstanding depth of field and depth perception, unmatched by optical systems. You're able to use much less light as camera sensitivity compensates for that. So the patient is more able to comfortably fixate into the light. You can easily overcome patients' head positioning problems, such as forward or backward tilting, or even extreme kyphosis with very elevated head positioning on the table. You just adjust the microscope head tilting and height, and this makes no difference in your sitting position. It's a wonderful teaching tool. The assisting surgeon and the trainees have exactly the same view. The assisting surgeon being able to easily help or intervene seamlessly without even having to exchange position in many instances, both confidently being able to follow the surgical maneuvers. The assisting surgeon is able to follow the surgery in a more distanced way, safely, maybe diminishing the trainee's anxiety and adding some notion of autonomy, very important to enhance confidence. You can have many trainees observing in the room, taking advantage of the same surgeon's view. The recorded surgery will reproduce exactly what was saw by the surgeon during surgery. This way, the experience is the same as seeing the surgery live, as a surgical teaching tool unprecedented. And I would strongly recommend the audience to watch the 3D videos in my channel with an appropriate setup to get an idea. Also, the room surgical team have a complete understanding of the eye structures and all the different planes we operate on, and are able to understand much more what is happening. Besides performing their tasks much better, especially the surgical instrumentation technician, the whole team feels much more valued and appreciate that they can have such a wonderful view of the surgery. and is thrilled to participate much more now. I'm pretty sure that this is the future of the microscope. Many more capabilities will surely be incorporated in a very near future. Augmented reality is the one that will really change the game. Machine surgical parameters can be overlaid in the screen so the surgeon can appreciate in real time how things are happening. Some useful templates, such as incisions placement, intended capsular axis size and place, and toric IOL axis alignment, for example, will greatly facilitate our life. Instant measurements, such as corneal curvatures, corneal size, corneal topography overlay, and so on, will surely be available soon. Some systems already have them. Corneal OCT also. I look forward to all this. Are there any difficulties with the system? Sure. From the surgeon point of view, it's very strange that you don't know where the eye is. How is that? With the optical microscope, the surgeon has a very fixed position in relation to the patient's eye and can find the eye without looking outside the microscope. With a heads-up operating system, not anymore. So, in the first surgeries, the surgeon has to look to the patient's eye directly to position the instrument and then look at the screen. But with time, one gets used to find the eye without looking directly, using the hand supported on the patient's forehead, for example, or even by using the peripheral vision. Other method is to put the instrument somewhere in the operation field over the eye and then know where things are. Using an operating chair with armrest greatly facilitates that, as your elbow acts as a fixed point in relation to the patient's eye and your coordinates positioning system is set. Also, the system is big, really big and obtrusive. It may be a problem to arrange a good position in a crowded or small operating room. Finally, some surgeons may be bothered by the very small image lag, but I assure you that this becomes imperceptible.
Well, Neto, the one last question I have is, do you take fellowships to study under you?
Well, unfortunately, I am... As I work in the public health system and I have very, let's say, strict constraints on how to work and where I work, this is an impossible task. I frequently have visitors that accompany me for 1 or 2 days, and this everyone is welcome. But as I do, let's say, a very high number of surgeries, it really, really leaves no time for me to... let's say, to orient or to orientate or to teach in a more appropriate way what I'm doing. So I think a fellowship is something impossible, really impossible for me to do. This year, I'm a volunteer to teach and to help trainees surgeons in the residency program, in the university residency program, to operate, and it's been a wonderful experience. It's a very different thing than from what I do, and I'm looking forward to implement some many techniques to teach many different techniques to the residents and share some experience.
Well, Neto, all I have to say is obrigado and thank you so much for joining me. It's been a really enjoyable conversation.
De nada, with me, you're welcome. Yeah. Thank you, Sunil. It was a very wonderful time and opportunity to share my experience and some points of view and tell something about my practice here. And I look forward to see other podcasts and to be with you. And thank you for the audience for the attention.
Registration for the 2021 College Congress which takes place between the 24th and 27th of May, is now open. This year, Congress will be fully virtual with all 30 hours of sessions being available on demand after the event. Pricing reflects the virtual nature of the meeting and is the lowest cost Congress in 15 years. As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get involved, talk about your work, or have any feedback, send us a message at communications@rcops.ac.uk.